It was terrorism. I went and talked with Bob Moses, and he said, "When you talk about terrorism, I experienced that."
You've been listening to Danny Glover, and we're urging you to go to the phone. We ask you to stand up for independent media. The number to call for WBAI. Please call in right now. Fill these phone lines. Let us know you're in the house. The number to call is 516-516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Make the call that makes it possible for WBAI to happen. You don't have to call long distance. That number is the number that WBAI uses. It is its lifeline for your support. If you'd like to listen to the whole interview with Danny Glover, of which we played a portion, excerpts, you can get that interview for $75. If you want to get the documentary Black Power Mixtape, it's yours for $75. Amazing documentary. That's what Danny was talking about. The documentary that has won many awards now, one of the Sundance selections of 2011, the film featuring rare archival footage shot between 1967 and 75, including some of the leading figures of the Black Power movement in the United States, like Stokely Carmichael, Bobby Seale, Huey Newton, Angela Davis, Eldridge Cleaver. The footage shot by two Swedish journalists discovered in the basement of Swedish public television 30 years later. We urge you to call in right now. We cannot do this without you. The number to call, 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Get the documentary for $75 contribution. Get the conversation with Danny Glover, the co-producer with Jocelyn Barnes of Black Power Mixtape. The conversation that we had at Sundance Film Festival headquarters for a $75 contribution. Put them together, $10 a month or $120. Both DVDs are yours, the film and the interview. The number to call is 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Make that call. Fill these phone lines. We cannot do it without you. Please call in. Let us know that you're there. 516-620-3602. Make that call right now, and we'll send you the documentary for just $75. You become a member of WBAI, and you get Black Power Mixtape. You're listening on the radio. You hear the audio track of video footage, and both the interview with clips of the film and the film itself. $120 for both. That number again, 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Please make your call. $120 for both. That's $10 a month. If you live in Hempstead, Long Island, or Hollis, Queens, or you live in Hoboken, New Jersey, or you live in Harlem in Manhattan, we ask you to call right now. The number to call is 516-620-3602. Hopog and Hicksville, you are not off the hook. Speaking of which, Red Hook, you aren't either. If you live in Greenpoint or Blue Point or the Oranges in New Jersey, or Mars Plains, Marstown, Mars Township, Parsippany, Whippany, White House Station, we're asking you to call in right now and let us know that you are there. Dover, Chatham, Chester, Montclair, Upper Montclair, Patterson. Please call in. Englewood, Maple, would you call? We ask you to call in right now. We'll send you Black Power Mixtape for a $75 contribution. Keep the phone calls coming in. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. We don't have much time today. I played much longer of the interview than I actually planned to. But, you know, I get caught up in it too, and I sit back and I listen to Danny Glover. You get the documentary, you get the conversation, or you get either one for $75 together for $120 or $10 a month. WBAI is in the most dire shape it's ever been in. Yes, we have to pay the rent atop the Empire State Building for the transmitter. That's first and foremost. That's tens of thousands of dollars a month. Even that is difficult. So every penny helps. 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. We need your help. And if you want to do dinner and a show, it is a great way to support WBAI. In fact, It's a $2,000 contribution. I know that's a huge contribution, but know that it's tax deductible. It's a charitable contribution. Just know that and know you're keeping it alive for people who can't afford to pledge but are deeply concerned about the future of WBAI and want to ensure its future. You know, for the more than 50 years, millions of people have supported WBAI to keep this independent media outlet alive. It's more important than ever. Even with the whole, with the internet, you know, there is a digital divide and people still listen to the radio, and BAI is ever more important in this time of corporatization and privatization to have independent media. I think the media can be the greatest force for peace on earth. Instead, the corporate networks wield it as a weapon of war. We can do so much better, and that's what we try to do on WBAI. Please call. If you want to do dinner and a show and hang out together, you and your special guest, maybe your partner or daughter or son, maybe you want to celebrate a birthday, graduation, and anniversary, I'd love to celebrate with you and keep WBAI alive with you. Please call in right now, 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Keep the phone calls coming in. We need your support. We ask you to be there. If you do dinner and a show, you don't have to know when you can do it. Just say, I want dinner and a show. Then my colleague Brenda will give you a call in the coming days, say, when do you want to come to the set of Democracy Now? When do you want to have dinner together? And you'll let her know. And if you say, I have no idea right now, that's fine. You can call her back or you can email. And when you're ready, I fix my schedule around yours. I make sure that we make this happen. BAI gets the money, that $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution. Please call. Please fill the phone lines, 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. Make the call that makes it possible for WBAI to happen. By the way, you can also pledge online at givetowbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. Give2wbai.org. It really matters. Fill the phone lines. Call in. Let us know you're there. Let us know you're standing up for independent media. Make that call right now. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602, and we'll send you a copy of this amazing documentary. Please call in. Let us know that you are there. It features Erykah Badu and Harry Belafonte and Kathleen Cleaver and Angela Davis and Robin Kelly and Tlaib Kweli and Melvin Van Peebles, Senya Sanchez, Bobby Seale, Huey P. Newton, William Consular, Emile D'Antonio, the filmmaker, and Angela Davis and Stokely Carmichael, also known as Kwame Ture, Eldridge Cleaver, Kathleen Cleaver. You know, their voices of the past and the voices of those that are alive today. Black Power Mixtape 67 to 75, a film by Göran Hugo Olsen, who was the Swedish filmmaker today, who found this footage and said, this is unbelievable that we have in Swedish television the footage of a movement, scores of hours of this gold mine of information. Black Power Mixtape, examining the evolution of the Black Power movement in the Black community and diaspora from 67 to 75. The film combining music, startling 16 millimeter footage lying undiscovered in the cellar of Swedish television for 30 years, contemporary audio interviews from leading African-American artists, activists, musicians, and scholars. It's an archive and music-driven documentary examining the evolution of the movement. We urge you to call in right now. We ask you to stand up for independent media. Call in, fill the phone lines. The number to call, 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. This film, at the end of the 60s, early 70s, Swedish interest in the civil rights movement, U.S. anti-war movement peaked. With a combination of commitment and naivete, Swedish filmmakers traveled across the Atlantic to explore the Black Power movement, which was being alternately ignored or portrayed in the U.S. media as violent, nascent terrorist movement. Despite the obstacles they were confronted with, both from conservative white American power establishment and from radicalized movement members themselves, the Swedish filmmakers did not cease their investigation, ultimately forming bonds with key figures in the Black Power movement based on their common objective of realizing equal rights for all. So the filmmaker Göran Hugo Olson brings this newly discovered footage to life, introducing it to a new generation across the world in a penetrating examination through the lens of Swedish filmmakers of the Black Power movement from 67 to 75 and its worldwide resonance today. Please call in. Please fill the phone lines with your support. We cannot do it without you. $75, you get Black Power Mixtape, the documentary. $75, you get the DVD of the interview I do with Danny Glover with the clips of the film. Please call in. We cannot do this without you. Only together. Keep the phone calls coming in. We need your support. We could really use a dinner and a show contribution today. Please call 516-620-3602 or give to WBAI.org. Please call in. Please let us know that you're there. Please let us know you're standing up for independent media. Make that call right now. Fill the phone lines. Your call makes a difference. Please let us know you're there. Please let us know that you're standing up for independent media. Please call 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. Please call in. Let us know that you're there. Let us know that Democracy Now! Matters to you. Fill the phone lines. That's right. Call in. We've got a number of people calling in. It's the final time, folks. We only have a minute to go. $120, you get both the DVD interview and the documentary. That's $120 or $10 a month. Or pledge $75 for Black Power Mixtape. Please call in right now. We cannot do this without you, only with you. Fill the phone lines. The number to call is 516-620-3602. And final time, if you want to come for dinner and a show, I'd love to host you here in New York. You sit on the set of Democracy Now!, watch the broadcast, meet the team that makes it happen, meet the guests in studio. We tour you through the greenest internet TV radio studio in the country. And then I host you personally for dinner. And I can't wait to do that. Please call in 516-620-3602. I celebrate with you and whoever you choose to bring. I can't wait. It's a $2,000. Contribution that goes directly to BAI or pledge $25 for Democracy Now! Bumper sticker. Final time, $75 for the remarkable award-winning documentary Black Power Mixtape. $75 contribution, $120 for the documentary and the interview. Please call 516-620-3602 or go to online and pledge at give to WBAI.org. That's give number two, WBAI.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
To say that you're tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifico Radio in New York City, WBAI, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. And, of course, thank you, Amy and Christine and all those folk. And I do need to stress that actually an even better phone number to call than the one that I heard some of them giving out is 212-209-2950. Again, 212-209-2950. And did you think that I made mistakes last week on Hour of the Wolf? Well, this week, we're going to have better F-ups. And more like this one. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. Electric philosophy, we hardly knew ya. But we'll have the editor, John Miller, and Sandra. Once again, good morning. Okay, so this is what's going on. For the first time ever on the air, I am going to try to use Skype to reach one of our guests. This is something that's constantly done and dumb at WBAI, but I have never done it, and we actually do have our ops director in what is the other room here at WHCR, Harlem Community Radio, but we're WBAI. It's complicated. So, since we've been broadcasting everything through computer, and I have to do Skype through the computer, especially it's being a Microsoft product, they bought it anyway, we're going to just try it live on the air and see how it works. So, bear with us, and I don't want to enter the number. You see, I knew it, I'm not calling a phone. I'm calling somebody's Skype. Okay, let's try this again. Sorry, gang. John Klima, don't you dare. Okay, search all people at Skype. Okay, yes, now there it is. And maybe if I just double click it. Ah, there we go. Okay, and call phone. Ah! It wants me to call their landline.
We don't want that.
No, we don't want that because the sound quality is going to be poor. Okay, so bear with me one moment, gang. I have to... Do you, Sam, do you have the email that John Klima sent us, which included his Skype name? There was a long, long, long thread.
I believe that I do.
What should we do while we wait?
Talk about who you are, Tempest, and why you are... Talk about your t-shirt that you're not wearing today.
I'm not wearing it today, but I'll be wearing it on Friday. I'm Kay Tempest Bradford. I'm a writer of science fiction and fantasy. I was published in Electric Velocipede a few years ago, and that's why I'm part of this farewell to Electric Velocipede. And ever since I was published in Electric Velocipede, I've been really good friends with John Klima, who's the editor. And actually,
well, talk about the value of independent presses.
Well, they
although have, we'll bring that up with
yeah. Well. I mean, as a writer of science fiction and fantasy, my big thing is like I'm always trying to read more so that I can grow and become a better writer. And just in reading a lot of different types of magazines, online, offline, you know, sort of major press and independent press or small press, I find that just the more interesting fiction, the more the fiction that pushes the boundaries more is found in the smaller press. And there's more room to experiment, more room to find new voices. That's what I like about a lot of the independent press magazines that I read. That's what one of the reasons why I really loved Electric Velocipede.
Yeah, actually. I mean, one of the things that I want to add about the importance of the independent presses, the small presses, is this is where the short story is alive today.
Yes.
Many, many science fiction writers, including the two in this room, have been so far primarily writers of short stories.
Yes.
And it is through such presses that these outlets exist.
Exactly. We only have, what, three major science fiction magazines now that do short stories? But there are a lot of...
There are a few online.
A few online. But there are a lot of independent short story markets. And a lot of really, really fantastic fiction to be found there. But I think that a lot of people actually don't know about it a lot. Even with some of the online markets, I feel that not all science fiction readers aren't aware of just how much great science fiction short story content is out there. It made a bad noise.
Yeah. No, hopefully it's a good noise. Hold on.
It's doing something.
Yeah. it looks like it was... Aunt John, are you there?
We don't have him yet. Well, I'll tell everybody about my t-shirt. A few years ago at, I think it must have been WisCon, it was some convention where we were having, where John threw a party, and John throws parties for the writers that he works with at Electric Velocipede and other publishers and whatnot. And I was trying to, I was saying that everybody needed to read Electric Velocipede. And so I said, you know, we're going to get everybody to read Electric Philosophy, even if I have to come to your house and smack you around to make you do it. And John said, we need to put that on a t-shirt. And so I was like, yes, let's put that on a t-shirt. And then he did. And he brought t-shirts to, I forget where the first place that the t-shirts debuted, but I know that when we had an Electric Philosophy reading at the KGB bar in New York City, that he brought a lot of them. And so there are many pictures from that night of tons of people wearing t-shirts that say, read of Electric Velocipede or Tempest will come to your house and smack you around.
Well, now if I wanted, or someone from our listening audience wanted one of those t-shirts, what would one do?
I don't know. We'll have to find out from John when we get him on Skype where one can actually get that t-shirt. Because I think at some point it was up on Zazzle, so you could order it yourself. It may still be somewhere in the bowels of Zazzle. I wasn't in charge of it, but I have two of them. I'm wearing one of mine at the event on Friday.
Maybe John will be able to bring some to sell or give away at the event on Friday.
What event is that?
Tell us about the event, Sam.
So on Friday night at 7 p.m. at Blue Stockings Books in New York City on the Lower East Side, we'll be having a issue release party / memorial service for Electric Velocipede so that the New York City science fiction and fantasy community can give a proper sending off to this really valuable and important and wonderful venue that so many great writers have been in and so many readers have really enjoyed.
Yes, the last issue is number 27.
27.
And so after 27 issues, John Klima is just like, all right, because he runs the magazine all by himself. You know, it's not backed by any major publisher. And, you know, even though he does have what's apparently a really great crew of readers, first readers, and other editors, he shoulders most of the work in putting the magazine together and all of the financial cost of putting the magazine together. And for one person to do that, it's hard.
No, 12 years, 27 issues, and 250 writers is an incredible record to rest on. So we that is a huge accomplishment.
Yes.
So we are sad there is no more Electrovelocipede, but we are going to celebrate it by having a lot of candy and alcohol and food and caffeine and really great writing. So that is 7 p.m. Friday, February 28th at Blue Stockings Books in Manhattan.
Cool. And that's on Allen Street?
Yes.
On the Lower East Side?
He says as he
looks,
up the exact address.
But that event is going to be a lot of fun because we have about, is it like 10?
10.
There are 10 writers who have been published in Electric Velocipede, including Sam and myself. We also have Richard Bowes, Barbara Krasnov, William Shun, Matthew Kressel, who just was nominated for, I think it's a short story, Nebula. So congratulations, Matt, if you were listening. And who else is going to be there? There's like we said, there's 10 people, and of course they're all floating out of my mind, like the song of Skype.
Mercurio de Rivera
Mercurio Rivera is going to be there. So it's actually going to be a who's who of the New York science fiction and fantasy literary scene. And
1 second, are you there, John?
No, not yet.
He can't hear us yet.
He
might be able to hear us.
Okay.
But it's going to...
Here we go.
Ah, we're calling John now.
No, he's calling us.
Oh, he's calling us. There's calls being made.
Calls.
Hello.
Hello, John.
Can you hear us, John?
Oh, that was Sam.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Can you hear us?
Hello?
Hello. He's not hearing us.
Oh. You know, live radio has got to be the best.
You know what?
I'm texting him now.
Text him and say we're going to phone him.
Okay. Okay. Live texting on the air.
Well, that wouldn't be a first.
Going to phone you.
The first digital broadcast ever.
The first digital broadcast.
Ever in the world was from WBAI.
Oh.
And Paul Wonder did about 1979.
I wonder how the first live tweet went on the air.
Okay.
On a radio station.
No, we've done that.
Okay. Well, not that I'm live tweeting, I'm just live texting.
Okay, so.
But we got to hear John's beautiful voice through the magical power of Skype.
Even if it was a little confused.
Even if it was a confused voice.
Because no one knows what's happening, least of all us.
That's all right. Well, how long ago did you discover Electric Velocipede, Sam?
So I've been reading Electric Velocipede for a while, several years at least, and it was when I was at Clarion in 2012 that I really started to hear a lot of focused buzz and a lot of people talking about and really referring to it as the sort of proving ground for really great, edgy, unusual fiction. And so that was when I really started to focus on it as like a market that I really wanted to get into because it was doing something really unique. Very, very much like a zine. It had a really great constructed feel to it that didn't feel like a web journal. It didn't feel like one of the big three. It was doing its own thing.
Yeah, I remember actually when Electric Velocipede actually looked and felt more like a zine, and then over time it evolved, and soon there was like the perfect binding and the really colorful covers, and John was always able to get like amazing.
And speaking of John, do we hear you now? Oh, we do. Thank you. It's a bit quiet, but...
He's here. Yay.
You're there.
Hi, John.
Do the best I can.
Oh, okay. That's better. I'm sorry the Skype didn't work. We saw you calling, and we heard you, but apparently you couldn't hear us.
No, which makes it difficult to have a conversation.
It does.
Yes, but it's typical WBAI radio, people talking past each other and all that. So we were talking about, I don't know what they were talking about. I was working with Tony Ryan. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Tony.
Our ops person. Thank you, Tony. You know, and then we decided to punt and go to telephone.
Yes. We were talking about how beautiful Electric Velocipede is as a physical object. That's what we were talking about.
Ah.
Yeah. Who did the cover for the Seven. Which issue is it?
27.
27.
That's a young man named, young man, roughly my age, so I'll say we're young, named Tom Davidson.
We're all young. I just turned 70.
Excellent. I've actually met Tom. He is a friend of Alex Irvine's.
Oh, yes.
And I don't know how he and Alex met. Tom was in New England. And I met him at a ReaderCon, I don't know how many years ago, and he had wanted to do covers and some work, and he did the Journal of Pulse-Pounding Narratives with Alex. They did two issues, and Tom did all the artwork. He had gotten in touch with me before, and I had kind of not jumped at the chance because I didn't know who he was, and I didn't have a sample of what he had done. And then once I saw what he had done, I realized that I needed to get him on board. So starting with issue 9, he did most of the covers from
I should say that, you know, I run the other reading series in New York, actually the first, the New York Review of Science Fiction reading series, and we are currently housed in this art gallery where we can display artwork. Sam J. Miller, who was here, read there in January.
During the polar vortex.
Yes. During the polar vortex, where despite its being 3 degrees on the thermometer, never mind the whatever it really felt like, we still got about 30 people, which for, you know, that kind of weather was pretty darned good. But at any rate, the point is, anytime I see that one of my performers is a person who's appeared in electric velocipedes, such as Robert Freeman Wexler, who's going to be reading at our next event on March 11th, along with Chandler Kang Smith, whenever I put up their covers from electric velocipede, because the art looks so fabulous on those 40-inch screens.
It really is great art. I like it a lot.
It's wonderful.
And before we were able to get through to you, I was interrupting the technology attempts to say how vital the independent small press has been, and you as a librarian would know this, to the short story writers of the world. And since we have two of them in studio here.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a...
And when I go home, my partner Barbara Krasnoff, who you have also published.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a point around the time I started Electric Velocipede where there weren't a lot of markets. It was kind of on the cusp of, if you can imagine it, before there was widespread internet for everybody. So it was a little bit more difficult to find things. You had to be more in the know or work a little harder. There, of course, was the big newsstand magazines, which in 2001 would have been your analog, Asimov, Fantasy and Science Fiction, Realms of Fantasy, and I'm not sure who else there was.
I think that was it at that point.
I think that's about it.
Yeah, and so you had sort of a, well, there would have been InterZone for people who were willing to pay for the overseas shipping.
Yeah, which is quite considerable and was not online.
Right. It was just a place to step in and become another venue for new writers and voracious readers, and it was it worked out really well.
And the highest quality. I mean, if we were to take a list of the people who have appeared in your 27 issues and just publish that list, it would be a great boon to our listeners when they call and ask, who should I be reading?
Well, John did do that in a post on the blog that listed something like 250 writers.
Oh, you see, I haven't
who
seen
are
that.
Almost all of them phenomenal. Listeners should definitely check that out.
And the blog is at?
You can just go to electricphilosophy.com. Right now, if you go there, it's dominated by the current and final issue 27. But if you click on my editorial link from that front page, I did list all of the contributors that have been in the magazine. It's slightly over 250 people. And I believe there was something like 70 of those people had appeared more than once. but I'm also counting, because I did a fair amount of poetry, so I'm counting poets who had more than one poem in an issue as someone who appeared more than once.
Mm.
So they may not have been in multiple issues, but they had more than one piece in the magazine.
Yeah, Clockwork Phoenix has done this, but they've had four issues. They're really a book more than a small press journal. Why, John, why, oh why, not having read the blog, why will there not be 28?
It's a combination of two factors. We'll do the easy one first.
And by the way, whatever your answer is, I don't care, but that's just so, you know.
The easy one is financial. There's no money or limited money coming in and money going out to pay for this. And
Jeez, sounds
the
like
one that's more
speech.
Difficult is probably the one that's more causing this to happen is just the requirement of my time and the different duties that I have at my job and here at home with a growing family. There's the chance that I could put more time into the magazine and grow the audience and build subscribers and do things to make it more financially viable. But I'm already working 45 to 50 hour a week at work. I've got two kids in grade school. I've got a wife who likes spending time with me. And it's just this never-ending project because there's always another issue, and the time is probably a bigger function of needing to cease. And I sat there, and it was a tough decision, and I finally came around to it, and I said, "Well, what else are you looking to do?" And I said, "I've been publishing. This was last year, so for 12 years, we had 27 issues." As we said, over 250 different contributors. We won a Hugo Award. We were nominated four times for the World Fantasy Award. Started Catherine Valenti's short fiction writing career because she'd never thought of writing short fiction until I asked her for a story.
And thank God you did, because I love her short stories. Mm-hmm. Novels are pretty darn good, but I'm a huge fan of short work.
Just from this past year, Val Nolan's story, The Irish Astronaut, got picked up by Jonathan Strawn and Gardner Desois for their year's best anthologies. A story I published by Elliot de Bodard not that long ago made the Tiptree Honor List for this year. And all of this from a magazine that, when we were in print, we made 300 copies. I never paid more than 1 cent a word for authors. So that's quite a lot of accomplishments for a magazine that, in a lot of ways, doesn't compete with the larger newsstand magazines or the bigger online magazines as far as size and payment to authors. So I could take solace in the fact that I had accomplished quite a bit with what I had.
Is this it forever in terms of a number 28? And then I should zip it outside of an announcement that I have to make, because we have two guests here, and actually, Tempest, you're going to become the host of this program in about 3 minutes.
Man.
You take over everything I do, so, like, what's this news to you? Sorry, go on, John.
I don't see doing an issue 28.
Ever.
I have learned to never say never.
Good.
But I at this point, I need a break. Last year, I did this magazine while I was working full-time. I did the magazine while I was working full-time and going to grad school full-time. I did the magazine when we moved from the East Coast to the Midwest. I did an anthology last year, and it's just, I need to take a break. I need to take a year off, because this year I'm a World Fantasy Award judge, so I don't have time for anything else.
I think you've earned a year off.
What are you doing here with us? Why should you should be reading some sort of book or something right now?
Yeah, maybe the I'm hoping that the appropriate word here is hiatus as opposed to final issue. Sam has been calling it a memorial, and I would personally prefer the word tribute.
We can go with that.
We printed up all those memorial flyers.
Oh, well, then yeah. We have to call it a memorial then.
Yeah, and it says that on Facebook and everything.
So it must be true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, listeners on who are on Facebook, you can go and take a look at more info at the event. Sam, the exact name is?
Electrovelocipede Issue 27 Release and Memorial Service.
Yeah, so go to Electric Velocipede first, like it, and then after you do that, click on Sam's link for the event at Blue Stocking Books on Allen Street on Friday at 7 p.m. and say that you're going.
That is what you should definitely do.
Tempest, it's your show.
It's my show. Well, my next question is, after you take some time off, will we be seeing you as an editor for any other anthologies, John? Because I know you've done a few.
There's nothing in the works right now. I don't have any projects lined up, and I don't have any projects that I'm trying to do anything with. So, maybe?
I mean, if nothing else, a book version of the Best of Volume 1.
We're not trying to make more work for you or anything. You should take that year off.
Farm it out.
Yeah, let somebody else go through and pick what should be in the first volume of The Best of Electric Philosophy. Let's make Sam do it.
Yeah, I know that Sam doesn't have a lot of things going on, so...
You know, give it some time. Let the people get hungry. Let the people get very sad and hungry.
Well, it's only a quarterly. We're all hungry.
We're all hungry for more, always. So now that Electric Velocipede is no more and you're going to be taking some breaks and reading a lot of things as a world fantasy judge, I assume that there is going to be a lot of short story and magazine reading for you in your future.
Yes.
And so far, have you discovered any places to find fiction that you weren't aware of that has great fiction?
Well, one of the things I've done here in the past couple years is, I always would joke, in 2012, I finally discovered the podcast. So I was able to find... So the whole Escape Artist crew of magazines, Podcastle, which is fantasy, Escape Pod, which is science fiction, and Pseudopod, which is dark fiction or horror. And I've been quite pleased with the quality of work that they have there. Now, those might be known to the people who are already reading Electric Philosophy, but maybe not.
And may I mention the one that I am the host and editor of, which is Lightspeed, which just got nominated for the 3 Nebula Awards yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's been also really good.
That's been the best.
I'm the host of the podcast. I have nothing to do with the magazine. That's John Joseph Adams, and the readers and the podcast are created by Stefan Rudnicki and Skyboat Media. But I'm the editor, and yes, I'm the host. With a better voice than that. But I wanted to mention it because the quality of stories and Matt Kressel had a story in Lightspeed that was podcast dead. That mm-hmm. Raj Khanna, he was the editor of the podcast at that time,
mm-hmm.
came out with Stefan Rudnicki reading it, and that is a superb story.
Hmm. Is that the one that just got nominated for Nebula?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's why I was mentioning it. So have you, John, ever thought of like turning the backlist of Electric Philosophy stories over to a podcast producer or somebody like that?
Do we know anyone like that?
They certainly could be. I've not pursued that very much.
This was a hint, but no.
Well,
I've never actually produced one. I edit and sound them. I have to work with Tempest on one and some other people to make the sound good, but I would like to produce.
Well, there are a couple of stories, or probably more than a couple, that have been on the Escape Pod podcast, haven't there, from Electric Philosophy?
Yeah, because they do reprints as well as original fiction.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
So all of the rights to all of the stories, except maybe the most recent issue, are in the hands of the authors.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's up to them to decide. Now, I could coordinate people and sort of cajole and encourage people to do more podcasting of their fiction.
which I think would be worthwhile. I know I did a reading last month of Jeffrey Ford's The Way He Does It, which was one of my favorite stories that I ever published.
Mm-hmm.
And even my poor, unrehearsed reading of it got some great reactions.
You've got the voice for it.
Well, the funny thing is I shared the reading spot with Ray Carson, and she said, oh, you can go first. So I got up, I said, I'm going to read a story from Jeffrey Ford, and she said, oh, maybe I should go first.
It's true. It's hard to go wrong with Jeffrey Ford.
And then I read the story, and she said, we might just end this, because I don't think anything I'm going to say is going to be as good as what Jeff wrote. But
aww.
Her reading was great, so it wasn't.
And with no offense to Jeff, he's not the best reader.
Oh.
I've worked
it depends on the story, because sometimes his stories need his accent.
Well, the accent, yeah, but it's you know what it is? I'm talking about not his. I've never heard him in front of a mic. No, yes, I have. Okay. He did it on Hour of the Wolf once, and that was good. But when he does his public readings, like New York Review of Science Fiction or KGB, I'll just teach him how to use a microphone. That's all.
So all of us need microphone tutoring every now and then.
Yes. I'm going to be giving a class at ReaderCon at LunaCon.
Awesome.
Nice.
So how was your reading skills, Sam, when you read last month? Was it last month? Yes.
I'm scared of microphones, but I think I did okay.
I think you acquitted yourself fine.
It's not for me to say. I don't know. Perhaps if someone here was in the room and wanted to rave about my performance, they would be permitted to do so.
I produced it. Can I say it was very, very good and broadcast worthy?
Oh, thank nice. You. Awesome. Thank well, you. And we'll have another chance for broadcast worthiness on Friday.
That's right.
And John is going to be here with us, which I'm super excited about.
That's amazing. But I also just wanted to mention that Sam J. Miller had a story that I edited and hosted. No, it was my first not hosting it. It was still Jack Kincaid was the host, read by Paul Bamer. 12 reasons?
57 reasons 57 for the Slate Quarter Suicides, which was my audition story to Altered Fluid, the incredible writers group that I am a part of with Tempest. I couldn't listen to it. It was marvelously produced, but I couldn't listen to an actor reading my words. It was
hard.
Like someone was reading my thoughts.
I'm a huge fan of the author's voice.
Mm-hmm.
However, another person by the name of Matthew Kressel, when he heard his story being read by Stefan Rudnicki, and then we'll let you answer the questions, since Tempest is hosting. Stefan Rudnicki, he said, you know, I had these characters in my head. I created them. I know them intimately, but I never knew what their voices were until I heard this narrator. And Stefan Rudnicki is one of the top audiobook people in the country. Not that Paul Bamer is bad. He does a lot of books and Star Trek episodes, which I never knew until you told me, by the way, Sam.
Yes, there's something to be said for playing a Nazi in multiple Star Trek franchises.
That's right. That's right. On at least three shows.
That's not why I had a problem listening to him reading my story, though. That is purely
it's the inner voice.
Purely personal issues.
It's the inner voice. Well, and it can be hard, but I actually have found having someone else read a story to be somewhat liberating. I wrote a story that was published in Sybil's Garage, and the story is it's called Alain Vital. And it was a really difficult story to write because basically I was writing about all of my feelings about when my mother died. And, like, I'd never read that story in public. I can't because I would break down in sobs and no one wants to see that. So I never read it. But I did send it to Escape Pod and they accepted it. And Mer Lafferty, who was also the host and editor at the time, read it. And I wasn't going to listen. Because I was like, I'm just going to be sobbing and there's no point. But I saw on the forums how many people complimented her on the reading. And so I was like, well, maybe let me listen to like 5 minutes of it. And I ended up listening to the whole story because, you know, she was so good. But it wasn't just that. It was like because it was outside of me and I was able to like listen to it as an outside observer. I wasn't just like in that story and sobbing. But she did such a great job with it.
And then there's the live radio broadcast plays that some people do.
I don't know anything about
and
that.
I don't know if anybody will give forgiveness for until forgiveness. It was not bad. It was not all it should have been.
Well, we can always do it better. But you know,
yeah, if we ever get a studio again.
The story that I wrote.
Well, let me just explain to listeners live on Hour of the Wolf.
Yes.
And live at ReaderCon.
Yes.
We did a radio play by K. Tempest Bradford. Sorry, yes. Go on.
But the story that I...
You too, was Sam, can arrange this.
...published in Electric Philosophy, which is called Enmity, I've only ever read it once. And the reason why I've only ever read it once is because it is a story that requires so many different voices that I have to get other people to read it with me, and nobody ever wants to read it with me because they're reading their other stuff. But that could make an interesting podcast.
But you see, I can get
podcast.
Actors.
Right. You know, we'll get Jim to get some actors to do it. Because I've always actually really wanted that story to be podcast, but nobody has wanted to podcast it yet. John is the person who has loved that story the best.
Well, maybe that could be the first of an EV-branded series of readings.
Maybe. John, you want to organize that?
No. Yeah, I'll just whip that out.
Just talk to me tomorrow, or better yet, Saturday. Oh, no, you're still in New York on Saturday. Sunday.
Do we need to coerce your co-readers Friday night to help read your story, Tempest?
Maybe.
I can make a commitment right now, because I have no idea what I'm committing to.
And we only have... There are
have
be
we
so
named
many
who
readers?
The readers are?
We did talk about who the readers were earlier.
Yeah, because I was busy.
And so, but since we only have like 5 minutes, actually, I can find a section where there's only two voices, because there are three voices in the whole story, but I can find a section that you and I could do, Sam, that's only just the two voices, and we could have fun.
Do you want to do that right now? Is that what's happening?
No, we don't.
Okay.
No, Friday.
No, we'll do that on Friday.
Ah, I see.
Or you guys come back.
We can do a lot of things.
Always happy to come back.
So, what is...
I'm sorry, I had interrupted a question and then...
Oh, yeah. Well, my question to John is, what is your best memory of being the editor of Electric Velocipede?
My best memory is probably walking down the stairs while I was refreshing Twitter on my phone and seeing that we had won the Hugo Award. And I missed a step as I was coming down, and I narrowly averted tumbling down the stairs to my death upon learning I won a Hugo Award.
Don't die.
And then I actually sat down on the steps, which I think is the only thing that saved me, and I had to read it again and make sure that I was actually reading what had happened. So that was a pretty good moment.
Yeah, and it was well-deserved.
And I think that's kind of what has led to me being at the event tomorrow, is that that was at the Montreal WorldCon?
Potentially. I don't go to a lot of WorldCons, so I can't always remember.
I think that was a WorldCon that was in Montreal, and we had a 3.5-year-old and a 6-month-old in our house, and I didn't think I could justify going to my wife's favorite city in the whole world and leaving her home alone with two little kids. and then when this came around, Sam had posted the link on Facebook, and I shared it, and my wife looked at me and she said, "Are you going?" I said, "No, I can't really afford to go." And she kind of looked at me askance and said, "You should go." She said, "You put a lot of time and effort into this. There's no reason for you to be here." I said, "Well, let me see if I can find a place to stay and look at tickets, because if the tickets were expensive, it was just going to be something I couldn't do." And it was cheaper to fly from to New York than it was to fly to Detroit. I went to a convention in Detroit last month, and I ended up driving because it was over $400 to fly to Detroit. And I thought, it's further than I really want to drive, but it's not worth spending so much money to fly for a half hour. I was surprised at how... And then my default, I don't know why I do this, but whenever I look at flying to the East Coast, I look at Newark first, I think, because I lived in New Jersey for so long.
It mm-hmm. actually makes a lot of sense, though,
that.
As a New Yorker. It's just a lot easier to get into Manhattan or Brooklyn from Newark Air International Airport than it is LaGuardia or JFK.
Traveling to WISCON last year, Tempest made fun of me because I was flying out from Newark. And,
I did.
And then someone's flight got canceled.
And it wasn't his.
And it wasn't mine.
It was not his.
Well, I'm rolling the dice and flying into LaGuardia because that ticket was cheaper than flying into Newark.
Yes.
Everybody who's going to the Consumer Electronics Show, except maybe Tempest, did you get there?
Yeah, I got there.
You got there this year. Most people leaving JFK had their flights canceled, as did Barbara, but the Newark flights went through.
Yeah, it's a coin toss, but we're actually not expecting that much snow, so you shouldn't have too much trouble getting here.
Unless you bring it with you.
Don't do that. Don't bring the snow with you.
Don't do
that. But I'm very excited. It's been a long time since I've seen John, so I'm very excited that he's going to be here.
I'm very excited that the
last few times we've seen each other has been sort of a tempest across the room.
Right. And then we're like off.
Well, last time I saw you, you were doing an event at KGB with Marla Yeomans.
Yep.
And you and I recorded an interview at Yonah Schimmel's.
Yes.
And I felt like, you know, instead of Breakfast with Les and Beth or something like one of those old radio shows, we were sort of doing like latkes with John and Jim. And we actually had the waiter came over and said, "Is this on WBAI?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Oh, boy."
Yeah.
Right. And I left that in the interview. I mean, it was a great show.
That's pretty awesome.
That's the last time I was in New York.
That's... So.
Been
a few years.
7 years ago, almost.
Yeah, I was going to say eight.
Because was that the event where we all wore the T-shirts?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was because I went to the American Library Association Midwinter Conference in Philadelphia.
Okay, that was.
And I took the train to New York because it was going to end the Tuesday before a KGB night, and I talked to it must have been Gavin and Ellen at the time. About coordinating readers who had been in Electric Velocipede, and then I could just take the train up to New York, hang out with people there, and then take the train back down to Philadelphia to fly back home.
Cool. Nice. Sam was asking earlier.
We've heard a lot about these T-shirts. What are the chances we might see some of them and possibly have them for sale at the event on Friday?
Barbara and I are wearing ours.
Well, there are the T-shirt that Tempest is talking about is a T-shirt that says, Tempest says, read Electric Velocipede or she will come to your house and smack you around.
That's right. I will.
I need that shirt.
And I don't have any more copies of that shirt.
Oh, no. Wasn't the shirt up on Zazzle for a little bit?
It is on Zazzle. If you can find the Electric Velocipede Zazzle store, and I think it's zazzle.com/EVZine. You can buy it there. I will have copies of the Electric Velocipede shirt, which looks like an old propaganda poster with me raising a drink in one hand and lots of little miniature velocipedes, and everything's all red and black.
I have that shirt, too.
So, I want that shirt, too.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it's amazing. But I still have both of my Tempest Says T-shirts because I got more than one, and one of them is kept sealed in a bag alongside the second copy of my Clarion T-shirt.
Okay, this is going to be on eBay.
Just sealed in a bag because
you know,
it's like I'm going to keep these forever.
You know, it's like
unopened.
Next year, Woody doll.
Yeah, that was funny because there were, I think I made a couple dozen of those shirts and we all had them on that night. So there's like just a mass of people wearing this black shirt with a threatening message on it.
And it's great. And sometimes when I wear that shirt out, because I wear a lot of shirts that just have cool things on them, but sometimes I forget that my T-shirts can be really threatening, and so when I wear that shirt out, people give me these looks, and it always takes me a while to figure out, like, why is everybody looking at me like I'm, like, mean or evil? I'm like, oh, right, because I have a shirt that's a threat.
Threatens bodily harm. Yeah, that'll do that.
Yeah, I actually thought that the wording of your Electric Velocipede shirt was actually sort of, for you, laid back.
It was a little laid back. But we conceived of that shirt, like, at a party or on Twitter or something, right?
I think you just said that to me.
Oh, so it's under
off the cuff, so I made it into a shirt.
Yeah. I was like, this is how we're gonna market Electric Velocipede. If you don't read it, I'm coming for you.
Do you think you could take a picture of yourself wearing that shirt and say and post it on the event page for the Facebook
event? I have a picture of her at KGB.
And say, Tempest says, come to the Electric Velocipede Memorial Service, or she'll come to your house and smack you around?
Yes.
That's a really
cool idea. I may actually be able to do that during the show. It would shut me up for a minute.
Oh, that would be awesome. Because, yes, we need to have that. Because, yes, I will come to people's house and smack them around if they don't come to our event.
Yes, and you can leave your phone number and for that to happen. No. But do let
right,
me
I'm sure there are people who would pay handsomely for the privilege.
But I do.
This is
I think we have a show for people who appreciate that kind of behavior. But let me just say, by the way, to the listeners, that we are in a fundraising drive for WBAI. Little would you know it from hearing this. And let me just say that you are hearing a type of a program that I can guarantee you won't hear anywhere else. Start with the fact that it's about speculative fiction. Continue with the fact that we have people from different communities. I would say at least two out of the four of us are community organizers. And so on and so forth. And this is what WBAI is. And we are not only an activist radio station, we are also a literary one. But the thing is that we won't be literary. The management of WBAI will not support that if we do not show that people pledge during the shows that talk about books and writing and reading and the arts and stuff like that. So let me ask everybody listening now, I mean all of you, to call right now, because there's one person there, 212-209-2950. Again, 212-209-2950, and make a pledge of $10. That's a month. That's $120 a year. Or just make a pledge of $25, which makes you a member of WBAI. If you would rather do this through the internet, what you can do is you can go to give2wbai.org and make your pledge there. And you can drop down, there's a drop down box, and it says name your favorite show. Well, we all know that it's Hour of the Wolf, don't we?
Yes.
I mean, Democracy Now gets theirs. Let's get ours, okay? So, and we're not even going to start discussing Null. So, 212-209-2950. And I'm sorry, but I did have to do that non-commercial.
That's okay. Look, because, you know, we don't have any other commercials, and that's why we love Pacifica Radio and WBAI. See, I can do this too.
yes, you can. I should actually have you on to help me.
That number again is 212-209-2950.
And if you're
good at this.
Whoops.
Uh-oh. What was that?
I don't know. This is my new phone. And I thought I had it muted.
No, I muted mine. Well, other than winning a Hugo, John, which is a fancy accomplishment of awesomeness, any other like standout moments for you as editor of Electric Velocipede?
I have to say, honestly, the last year or two, that was since we went back online, or since we went online with issue 23, there's been a real swell of interest and people talking about the magazine that I hadn't had prior to that. So it's sort of I'm going to places and people are talking about it and people are excited about it, and it's just been sort of a growing series of voices out there, which has been really, really great to run into people that know what it is and people who I don't know. So it's one thing to keep running into people that I know that want to talk about the magazine, but then when it's people that I've never heard of and I don't know who they are, but they know what I've done or they've been reading it, and that's been really exciting.
That's awesome. Have you found it to be like a drastically different experience being the editor of a magazine that's online and in print, as opposed to just being in print, other than the fact that, you know, you're getting, you know, more different kinds of people reading it?
Um, I feel like I have better access of people being online. Because when we printed it, we only did 300 copies at a time. So there wasn't enough copies to do any real distribution. So if I wasn't going to a convention with copies, then you weren't going to find it. You weren't going to find a physical issue. And just the whole running around trying to find stories to carry something that small was really difficult. So while I had something that I could hand to people and carry around and show people, no matter what your Wi-Fi signal was like, that was great. But it just opened up the magazine to a much bigger audience. And I think because I always would hear comments about, like, oh, I want to send this story to you, but it's not weird enough or it's not odd enough. And my first thought was always, I don't do weird things. And then I thought, well, yeah, you do. You have stories like a story in this last issue where it's about a candy clown who goes along with a candy circus to children's birthday parties, and then she helps all the parts of the circus come alive, and they all get eaten, and they're very excited because their purpose in life is to be eaten by children.
Oh, my.
But she's the seed for future candy circuses and carnivals, so she never gets to have the joy of making a child happy, and so she's not sure what to do with her life. That's kind of an odd story.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
But it's also really cool at the same time, so it's just the type of thing that you don't always see lots of places.
Yeah. Rick Bowes was saying that one of the things that made Electrophilosophede really valuable was that it's not the place that you sent the story that's been rejected by everybody, and it's not the place that you sent the story that was written specially for an anthology about zombies on Medicaid, that it was the place for the story that you absolutely had to write, and you couldn't not write it, and it was bizarre and special and was about candy clowns whose purpose in life is to be eaten by children, and you had to find it was the market for that story. There was no other market for that story.
Yeah, very true. I definitely felt that way about the story that that you published, because I mean, though it had been rejected in a lot of places, I think that the reason why you liked it was the reason why people kept rejecting it in all the other places wasn't that they didn't think it was good. Like, they were just confused by it. Like, a lot of editors just didn't really grok what was going on in that story.
Grok.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of circuses, let me push the reading I'm doing next, but I'll mention it more next week, that our next reading at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, which will not be the first Tuesday, we're going to be doing the second Tuesday for the next 3 months, each one for a different reason, are both circus writers, as it were. Chandler Klang Smith has a book called Golden Land After Dark, which is definitely an evil clown story, not for Nebula-nominated Veronica Shaness, who once screamed when I took a mic windscreen and put it on my nose. She actually has a serious clown phobia. And Robert Freeman Wexler, who wrote a novel in 2004 called Circus of the Grand Design. And that will be on March 11th. And since the event that we're talking about here is this coming Friday, I will go back. But to learn more, you can also go to Facebook and check out NYRSF Readings, NYRSF, New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, or just friend me and I'll put you through, or go to ourwolf.com, and that will lead you to web pages for the NYRSF readings, which are actually cooler than the Facebook pages. But I had to promote that event, and since you guys spoke circuses, and let me say, in April, awesome, we're going to have a tribute to Robert Sheckley with Elisa Quitney. Sheckley is her last name. His daughter, who used to be, I think, babysat, or at least looked after when Robert Sheckley was the editor of Omni, and Ellen Datlow used to see poor little Elisa, who is now a best-selling writer of supernatural romance comedy novels. And Yeah. And, I mean, if I named the people who are going to be doing the tributes, such as Rudy Rucker, Michael Swanwick, all these people will be there. Be very cool. And then in May, a play. We're doing another play. This one by Andrea Hairston.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
Featuring music by Pan Morrigan. And I don't remember the three actors in the cast, but one of them is Amma Patterson. And so all that is enough to go to the website or Facebook and you'll learn more about all this. I'm sorry, go on, guys. I'm turning off my mic again. I'm going to look for that photo I've got of you, Tempest, wearing that shirt.
Okay. Well, we have to have our non-commercial breaks.
That's right. That number again is 212-209-2950.
He's so good at this. It's amazing.
And how much should they pledge?
You should pledge $10
a month. You should
become
a BAI Hundreds. Buddy. No, a BAI buddy. No.
Give until it hurts.
Give until it helps is what we sometimes
give
say.
Give until it helps.
But
become a BAI buddy
a BAI buddy for $10
a month.
Yeah,
or you could just $25.
And actually you get a lot of nifty freebies when you become a BAI buddy, including a thumb drive that has amazing, you know, Best of BAI has amazing stuff ranging from Martin Luther King to Phil Oakes to the people who have passed through these studios through the years are amazing.
Great. Sweet. Well, speaking of freebies and swag, etc., John, why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the goodies that will be on hand at the memorial service Friday, February 28th at 7 p.m. at Blue Stockings Books?
At what address? On Allen Street.
On Allen Street.
Oh, dear.
Allen Street, just below Houston.
173, I believe.
Okay, Allen Street, just south of Houston.
Yeah. Yes.
172 Allen Street.
Ooh. There we go.
Thank you, John.
Says the man from the Midwest. Okay.
He's a New Yorker.
So, yes, tell us about the swag.
He's a librarian.
We got a bunch of things that I sent. There's a number of the... If you go to the Facebook event page, you will see two new photos on it. One is the Tempest shirt with me, William Shun, and Tempest wearing the shirts. Tempest looking innocent, which is an unusual look for her. So.
Well, she often looks innocent, but
right?
whether one actually
it's
is.
It's a pose. It's a pose.
And then the shirt I was talking about, which is sort of what I call my propaganda shirt, it says, "Short fiction is dead" across the top, but "Long live short fiction" underneath the image. And has me raising a glass to above a field of velocipedes.
I love it.
There will be copies of that shirt there. There are a limited number of them. There are going to be back issues. I know that there will be issues 19, 20, 17, 18, which was a double issue, which features several of the readers in it. I know Tempest's story is in that one. I think Richard Bowe's story is in that issue. Barbara Krasnow's story is in that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even Matt Kressel's story.
It is.
Story is in that issue. So there'll be copies.
And a great
of that.
Cover on that issue.
Yeah, that one had one of the series. Once I told Tom we were going to color covers, that made like a huge... Just totally opened up the world to him for what he could do and the types of things. Issue 19, which is, again... Red, I guess I like red, but it's red with a bird on it. That image was picked up for the Spectrum anthology, which is, if our listeners don't know, it's a big annual anthology of all the cool art that's happening in the speculative world, because those types of artists don't tend to get recognition.
Listen, so I didn't
the more mainstream art award.
True.
So that was really cool to have that piece get picked up by them. And then I did a couple chapbooks. So there's a Robert Freeman Wexler chapbook that will be there, Ezra Pines chapbook, and Ezra Pines is a pseudonym of a writer named Mark Rich. And Ezra co-wrote some stories with Rick Bowes, so that will be kind of fun if you want to take a look at that. There is a odd little chapbook of a story that I wrote that will be there. And I know I just stuffed other things in there, so there'll be other cool and fun things in there that we'll find out.
And there's e-swag as well, is there not?
Yes, and we're putting together a sampler of all the stories, so the full stories of what's being read on Friday night, since no one will have time to read their entire story, except maybe Jonathan Wood, because his story is quite short. But I think for the most of the rest of you, and I certainly know Mr. Sam's story is probably the longest one, you will only get little teaser tastes on Friday night, so if you want to get the whole story, you can go tomorrow morning. I'm going to get it posted up, and you'll be able to go buy copies of all of the stories that are being read on Friday night.
How many of the issues of the magazine will be available Friday night sold by Blue Stockings?
I think there's going to be three separate... Well, there are three issues that I know I had a good number of copies of issues of, and then there are some other more rare issues that I had single or just a couple copies left that I put into the boxes that I shipped out. So there'll be, I think, issue number 9, which had a Hal Duncan story in it, and this is right before Vellum came out, and Macmillan UK did a really fancy arc for the Vellum book that became a collectible, and people were buying it for £500.
Wow.
Because it was so well done and so nice. And so then people were trying to collect anything that Hal had done, and he had only published one or two stories before Electric Velocipede, and it came out before Vellum came out. So people were buying... I sold out of that issue very quickly because people were buying lots of copies of it. So I actually have a copy of that left.
Wow, so this is a one-of-a-kind item that someone can perhaps bid on. Perhaps we could have an impromptu auction on this one-of-a-kind.
Oh, my goodness.
Not here on the air, but had we arranged it long in advance, we could have done a thank you to listeners involving an Electric Velocipede. Maybe we can do that with some of the e-stuff. Sometime
and,
in the future.
I'm also going to be bringing with me, because I forgot to put it in the box, I'm going to bring, I have three arcs, so three advanced reading copies of Logorrhea, which is an anthology that I edited of stories inspired by spelling bee winning words.
And being a logoreist, how did you come up with the name Electric Velocipede?
It's...
And by the way, I was amazed that I was talking into my brand new phone last night, dictating a message to Sam Miller, and I said Electric Velocipede, and it got it correct, and it even... capitalized it as if somewhere in the Googleverse it knew the magazine.
Miss Google is on point.
Google knows.
Yeah. Well, I had I was going to call, so I went and saw Gavin Grant talk about magazines, and everyone can make a magazine, and I said, I'm going to make a magazine. I miss doing magazine stuff. I'd left publishing to work as a computer programmer, but I needed a name, and I was going to call it Placebo. Originally.
And, you had to do a dual test on people. You're reading the real story, you're reading the fake version of the same story, yes. Sorry.
But that was the name of a zine that Moshe Feder had published.
That's right.
In the early 80s, I believe.
Late 70s, early 80s, yes.
And not that there was really probably a possibility of conflict. I had worked with Moshe at Tor Books, someone I knew, and I thought, well, I can't really do that to him because it's going to look like I'm trying to, stick it to him or whatever. So I said, okay, so I need a new name. So my wife and I were sitting around tossing names back and forth and giggling at combinations of things. So I was trying to just put a couple words together that didn't really make sense together. And her father has a compulsion to call bicycles velocipedes.
Which is accurate.
And so I just blurted out Electric Velocipede, and we just stopped and looked at each other, and I said, that's it. That's going to work. It's just odd and unusual, but it's not off-putting. It's a mouthful. And I find to this day, if I have to type the word electric in a report or something or an email, I type the word velocipede afterwards.
Yeah, I just have to mention that earlier this week, Barbara Krasnoff and I were watching one of our favorite shows on Netflix, Miss Fisher's Mysteries, which is an Australian 1920s feminist murder mystery. Wonderful stuff, better than most American shows. And somebody bicycles by, and somebody says, oh, look, there goes the velocipede. And we were just like digging each other in the arms, in the sides of our arms. So, and said, yeah, but it's not electric.
Yeah, I need an actual physical electric philosophy in order to be happy at this point.
Yeah, Jim, can you get on that?
Actually, I know any number of steampunkers who would be happy to do it.
To put together an electric philosophy.
Oh, yes, there's this woman, a wonderful woman who's into bizarre bicycles from at ReaderCon last year. She's a Linux geek. You must know her, Tempest. You must. She's also like on the single malt listserv, and she's written tech for Computer World, among other places.
Sweet.
And she builds electric bicycles and bizarre. They call them ships. There's this whole little thing in the Boston area.
Maybe this is what we need to do to commemorate the end of electric velocipede. Ooh, is we need to make an electric velocipede or get somebody to make one for us.
Or a parade of them going down Allen Street.
We could do that too.
Well, one thing that is a potentially an added draw to get folks to come out is that there's going to be a truly stunning after party that you can only find out how to get to if you come to the event.
That's true.
Or have Tempest's cell phone number and can text her.
Everybody in the world has Tempest's.
And so perhaps we could have a velocipede making at that party. We can assemble something.
There we go.
I'll bring the cray paper.
that sounds amazing.
It's funny that you mentioned steampunk because I've been a longtime fan of steampunk. I've encountered it with Internal Devices by K.W. Jeter, and then Paul DiFilippo's The Steampunk Trilogy. So that was kind of my mindset with the Electric Velocipede. I was going to do a steampunk zine in 2001. And whenever I mentioned that to people, I always got this eye roll and, steampunk, I guess. it got so frustrating that after 4 issues, I was like, you know what, forget it. I'm going to stop asking people for steampunk things and trying to find it because no one cares.
And yet, here we are.
Yes.
Many years later, people still caring about steampunk a lot.
Last week, Lightspeed published a story by Kerry Vaughan that was a pure classic steampunk short story.
Yeah. Even I'm working on a steampunk short story.
Tell us more.
The world is coming to an end.
Well, yeah, you'll have to come on the air and read it.
Yes. But the last time I came on the air and read something, it didn't turn out that well, so I don't know. We'll see.
But that was with the group, right?
Yeah, that was with the group.
Yeah, well, you see, that doesn't count.
Felt like it counted.
That was a gimme.
That number again is 212-209-2950.
Sam.
Yes.
You have organized this thing.
Yes.
What was the inspiration? You're very often, you call yourself a community organizer, and indeed you are, usually for more activist type events.
So that is my day job. I've been a community organizer for the past 10, 11 years, and so organizing protests and actions is my bread and butter, and I really like.
See, this is the thing: is I'm protesting the closing. I'm sorry, John. I'm protesting the closing of Electric Velocipede, but.
Well, I like to think of protests as equally about celebration as condemnation, and about celebrating what we are as a community and what we want as much as what we don't want. So, to me, when I learned that this was going to be the last issue and that I had, you know, finally gotten a story in this market that I valued so highly, and that it was going to be the last one, I felt like that was an opportunity to. Come together and really, I mean, you know, some people have taken issue with it being called a memorial service, but I really think that when we lose something, we as humans really want to be able to come together and talk about it and sit Shiva, as it were. So it seemed like a really exciting prospect, especially because I knew so many New York City writers had been published in Electric Velocipede, and I knew it had such a big readership in New York to do an event like that. So I, you know, reached out to John and asked if that would be okay, and you know, didn't presume that he would be able to make it out here. Although I'm super happy that he's coming. So you know, we just sort of took it from there, and it, you know, I've never organized a reading with 10 participants before. It's utterly terrifying.
You're
not
doing that low here.
Yeah, it's the Blue Stockings has not.
I have a very rude word for some of Ellen's readings, where she has her new anthology, and everybody in that anthology gets like 2.5 minutes.
Yeah,
that's all right though.
Blue Stockings hasn't
yet
gotten.
They're great events, but I have a very rude word for it.
I have a request into Blue Stockings to install an alligator pit under the pulpit, so that if people go 10 seconds over their time, they can be immediately dropped to their death. They have not returned my calls about that. So in the meantime, we'll just have to be emceeing with an iron fist to ensure an orderly progression of 10 awesome writers.
We'll have an egg like we have at Alter Fluid meetings that makes a really loud, rude sound when it's time for you to stop talking.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't believe I've mentioned the candy yet. The candy is very important. There will be a ton of candy distributed because I believe in bribing an audience.
Is anything sugar-free, asked the diabetic? Yeah, I didn't think of that one, did you, community?
Well,
organizer?
I haven't yet gone out to buy the candy, so I can indeed. I know that is the thing, sugar-free candy.
Yeah,
so
you probably find
if
something.
Nothing else, Ricola cough drops are sugar-free, and they're not that untasty.
That's just kind of sad.
Although there is,
I heard that's their new ad campaign.
There is somehow some way.
There's
Ricola. Thank you, Lister.
Somehow
thank you,
there's
Lister.
Ricola
and with
in front
the very,
of us.
With the very ones.
This
with
is
the
actually
very
beautiful.
Very sorely needed. Thank
you know,
you.
Yes, this
literally
is thinking
sorely.
About the whole idea of like the you know celebration and protest sort of being in the same milieu. I feel like in general short fiction. I mean the whole like short fiction is dead thing. I remember like what that arose out of because people were like, oh well, short fiction, blah blah. But there really was a moment at which people like John and other folks who were starting magazines, both online and off. I'm thinking also like Strange Horizons rose up out of this. Just saying like, no, short fiction is not dead.
Lady Churchill's Rosebud.
Yeah. And also just saying that short fiction was an important part of our genre and there needed to be more markets, for people to like get that short fiction out there. Because short fiction is really important to our community and to the genre, because this is where, you know, some people have, you know, done their short fiction and that's sort of been like their training for novel writing, but it's actually more than that. Like there are plenty of science fictional, fantastical, interstitial ideas that work best in the short form that speak to people in short form. You can have conversations amongst writers in the short form much, you know, quicker, faster, lither. I don't know if that's a word.
Yeah, you can, end a story with the denouement that doesn't hang, but it takes you right to the point of revelation and stops.
Right.
Whereas in a novel, you have to have a coda. You have to say, okay, that was great. Now what happened?
Right.
No, and then you have to do it in a short story. You is like, and James Gunn is the one who said this, you're polishing a gem.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, the past 10, you know, 15, 20 years have seen a really startling transformation in how short fiction happens in the genre and the, you know, proliferation of amazing online journals that are publishing stuff that, in my opinion, is in a lot of ways more exciting, more complex, more diverse than a lot of what the sort of what we've been calling the newsstand science fiction fantasy outlets publish. So I feel like Electric Velocipede occupies a really special place in that transition from print to online and to, you know, John, you mentioned podcasts before and this sort of all these new ways in which great writing gets in the hands of great readers.
And it's using new media mm-hmm. with which to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the short fiction format, I think, lends itself really well to a more mobile device-based society because I'm sitting here right now and I can see two iPads and an iPhone. Actually, I can touch two iPads and an iPhone from where I'm sitting.
But why would you?
And, because it's so fun. and it's so easy
particularly on the iPad, I find that reading experience quite pleasant. The phone is fine in a pinch, but it's I am now the owner of glasses that I don't like to wear, and reading on the iPhone is only going to make those more necessary. But on the iPad, it's just, you know, you've got 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there. You can read a story or a chunk of a story, and it's a lot easier to keep up with that than reading a novel. I every now and again, I'll check out things through the library on my iPad. I remember I got Game of Thrones, and at that time, it was only set up for a week checkout, and I got it, and I looked at it, I said, I'm never going to get this read.
Yeah, Overdrive Media, I believe, is the name of the software that most libraries use to check out books, and it's wonderful. It's freeware, and if you have a library card, you can register it with this, and it and each library has a number of books that they are allowed to loan out at a given time.
But then you only a week. That's just
Mine, but of course, mine gives me a month.
It depends
or,
on
or
the
2 weeks and then one automatic renewable.
It depends on the book sometimes, because like Game of Thrones, I assume, is very highly sought after.
Yeah, depends, and that was
how many
when we first were getting set up. We for whatever reason we had a week checkout on everything. We've changed that to 3 weeks now to match our print book checkout. If you had another 8 hours, I could talk to you about libraries and e-books.
Lister, you don't mind, right? No, he has to do
you
his
and
show
I,
in a few minutes.
You and I definitely have to carve out time to talk about the whole library e-book thing. I've written many articles about my frustrations about this.
Yeah,
I'm sure that there will be more as BEA comes up again
this
year.
It's early days, but it would be a great topic to bring up to have you on around BEA time when more librarians and like John are in town.
Yes.
And I do think that short fiction really inhabits the app ecosystem really nicely. Like I'll be reading on my RSS reader on my phone. I'll read about a great story that's just come out from Lightspeed or Strange Horizons or Beneath Ceaseless Skies or any of the great online places. And then I can just tap a button and it'll download to my Pocket app. And then I'll, like today I was at the gym on the treadmill reading short fiction. That was amazing.
You were at the gym today?
Yes. Mm. I'm sorry.
That's
I'm seeing other gyms. Tempest is my
not
gym
me,
buddy.
Not
we're
me.
Supposed to be gym buddies, and yet he's at the gym without me. That's
this
all right.
Is not,
it's at my job. There's the gym by my
this
job.
This is not me, or his husband would kill me.
but yes, and Sam and I actually have been like trying to discover new ways to use Pocket. We're like Pocket friends now, so we can send each other stuff. And I also really love Pocket for reading short stories from online magazines, because the one thing that I just wish, and this again has a lot to do with what's going on with like all publishing and you know, just like ebook purveyors, is that all of the magazines that I like come to one place. Like they're delivered all to one app on my phone, because right now like I have to go to a bunch of different apps to get everything, because some magazines like you can get auto delivered on Kindle, some of them are on Nook but you can't get them auto delivered because you have to buy them every time. Who knows what the heck's going on with Google Play? Nothing good. And
not
then
yet.
There is like a subscription service. What is it called? The wireless books. Waitlist books. Waitlist books. You can also get.
There's also one of the oldest that go back to the days of BBS's Electric Literature.
Yeah. So there's all these different ways. None of them are as consolidated.
I've got to tell you that some of them are pretty good. I use a reader, Moon Reader Plus, that if I read something on my phone and I go home to my tablet or to the Kindle, it knows where I left off reading that story or book. Or listening to that podcast, it bookmarks and it goes across all of my devices, even my TV set. Thanks, using a Roku device.
Nice. So yeah,
or Chromecast.
I'm excited about.
It's in its
how this is going to get smoothed out in the near future, because that's going to happen.
You're hoping it will.
I actually am very confident that it will, because thanks to the sort of blossoming of e-publishing. Kindle, Amazon is pushing, shorter works, reading shorter works. Like, there are a lot of different outlets that are pushing the reading of shorter works.
And they're pushing fanfic.
Which and is... I'll read fanfic all day if you let me. I'll read Electric Velocipede fanfic. Like, I'm just going to there's got to be some fanfic about John Klima.
Ooh,
somewhere.
Okay. We've just created a new genre.
Yeah. We can do some Smash. We can figure that out.
We have exactly 5 minutes left before I have to start playing. Yeah, before I start playing my outro music. And so we need to because so far nobody's coming to this space, right? The space holds. If we really
a couple thousand people, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
In fact, 40 is pushing it.
That's all right. And we'll spill out into the street.
And all that. And so
10
far,
10 readers plus me, so.
Yeah, and given Facebook pluses, and I've learned to basically you triple, this is actually works well for the readings I do. If you triple the number of people that say yes on Facebook, ignore the maybes, only half of the people who say yes will show up, but you're going to get approximately triple the number of people that say yes in the crowd. So this place is filled to velocity to whatever. It's going to be filled.
It's going to be very crowded, so you should get there
early.
We should mention the admission price.
Oh, yeah. The admission price is a staggering zero. But Blue Stockings does offer
Blue Stockings is a great bookstore.
They offer their space for free for events like this, and they usually pass a hat, and we accept donations. There's going to be a raffle. We're going to be selling raffle tickets for winning awesome swag. So you should bring some money.
I did that first.
You invented the raffle. I did hear that.
I invented the raffle for New York Science Fiction readings. I'll tell you that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. They have amazing tea and coffee and sweet things. And I believe I've mentioned there will
be
candy.
Please do not order a latte or a cappuccino or anything.
It is a small space.
The problem is that
nothing that requires foamed milk.
It's the machine.
Yeah, yeah. The machine.
The machine that they have at Blue Stockings is you have somebody reading a very dramatic moment, and all of a sudden in the background.
That's all right. You can just incorporate it into your reading, and then the giant foam dragon came down upon us. But yes, yeah, so Friday, February 28th
at 7 p.m. at 172 Allen Street on the Lower East Side. You can take the F or the V as in Vixen train to 2nd Avenue.
Actually, no, you can't.
Only you would come.
There is no V train anymore. What is wrong
with
you?
Well, the internet says that there is.
There is no V train anymore.
Philosophy.
You can take the F train to 2nd Avenue. There's no V train.
When we started this broadcast, thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. There were 52 people who were going to the event, and there are now 55 people that say they're going to the event.
See, mm-hmm. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. And don't forget that this show is available online at archive.wbai.org or at ourwolf.com for 2 weeks, so people can still, and we can actually post this.
We'll be sending the link around.
We can post this on the event page, this
awesome
broadcast.
That's right. And they can continue to make donations at what phone number?
At 212-209-2950. But who are the readers?
So the full roster of amazing readers in alphabetical order.
Are you a
order.
Roster lister? Okay, it's just with the dreadlocks. I thought you were a roster. Sorry, go on.
So we have readings from Richard Bowes, Kay Tempest Bradford, Nancy Hightower, Robert J. Howe, Barbara Krasnoff, Matthew Kressel, some dude named Sam J. Miller, Mercurio D. Rivera, and William Shun, and with John Klima in attendance.
It's a killer event. It really is.
Yes.
This is just a spectacular, like, all-star.
That's right. And for folks who are unable to get room in the packed house, there will be a very... We're having this after party at an actual castle.
Yes.
It is a three-story apartment in New York City, which I was not aware was a thing.
Oh,
but
yes.
But it is. So there will be ample room at the after party.
And grid willing, we will be recording it.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, we'll be recording it. The question is how... Will it come out? I was mentioning this event.
Maybe our readings will just be so fabulous that they'll just break all recording equipment.
Yeah, well, that sort of happened at the Brooklyn Museum last week with some amazing women who all have I's in their name.
That's right.
Kiini, I mean, even Jemison,
yep, two
M-I-N
I's.
At the...
Yeah.
M-I-S-I. Yeah, right, two eyes.
Two eyes.
Yes, Nora has two eyes. So.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited, too.
So, John, thank you so much for being on the phone.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.
And we will see you on Friday.
Safe travels.
Yeah.
And Sam and Tempest, you have websites, people? Don't
I have a website. My website is ktempestbradford.com.
I have a website that is samjmiller.com.
We're both on Twitter.
What is our Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is Tiny Tempest.
My That's Twitter right. handle is Sentence Bender.
And mine is, believe it or not, Jim Freund.
That is John Klima.
Okay. And we're all on Facebook.
I'm not.
That's right. You're not. I was trying to tag you.
Nope.
Not possible. But go to Facebook, look up Electric Velocipede, like that page, then you'll see another link to the event on Friday. Go there, click yes, you're coming. And in the meantime, thank you all for listening. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. We will be back next week. I'm not exactly sure with what. The thon should have been over, but it's going at least another 2 weeks. So, yeah, when you don't raise money, just
keep asking.
Never mind. Never mind. Not going there. Visit me at ourwolf.com. And everybody, stay warm, whether you're in the Midwest or New York. And be good to each other. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clapper with Lister, coming to you on these airwaves very shortly. John, I'll see you on Friday.
That was wonderful. I'll see you then.
Great. Take care. Bye-bye.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Turn like me, they yearn for the flag too.
and drag it and rip it to shreds. Cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy, so just hand me a flag.